Tonight, friends or enemies, what President Trump said today about Kim Jong-un of North Korea and Russia's Vladimir Putin before meeting with the controversial president of the Philippines, as we look at the defeat of ISIS in that country with U.S. help. Inside the church, now a memorial to the 26 people killed by the Texas gunman 1 week ago today, as hundreds gather for the first service since the massacre. Place-based panic. More than two dozen people, most of them children, injured after a stairway collapses, sending them to the ground and the hospital. Melting away as nations meet about climate change, the disappearing glaciers in one of our greatest national parks. And flying high, what we've discovered about the airlines and the secrets to on-time arrival.
This is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. President Trump is in the Philippines at this hour, the last stop on his 12-day swing through Asia. The trip focused on garnering support for a united front against North Korea's nuclear threats and new trade deals with countries in the region. But a brief meeting with Vladimir Putin pushed the controversy over Russian election interference back into the headline once again. Our White House correspondent, Kelly O'Donnell, has been traveling with the president and brings us the latest from Manila.
The president's final stop and the first large-scale protest of his Asia tour. Spilling out in the streets near the U.S. Embassy in Manila. Water cannons kept them back. Here to attend a second economic summit, wearing traditional Philippine garb, a barong, side by side with the controversial Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, antagonist of human rights groups and supporter of extrajudicial killings. But as host, all the extravagant niceties. President Trump, who has measured his words in public during this tour, poked North Korea's leader on Twitter. "Why would Kim Jong-un insult me by calling me old when I would never call him short and fat? I try so hard to be his friend." Friend? An idea he was asked to explain at a news conference in Vietnam.
Strange things happen in life. That might be a strange thing to happen, but it's certainly a possibility.
Perhaps a distraction from the president's provocative comments to reporters on Air Force One after he met with Vladimir Putin, where he defended the Russian leader's denials of election interference.
I believe that he feels that he and Russia did not meddle in the election.
But after he disparaged Obama-era intelligence chiefs as political hacks for blaming Putin, the president tried a cleanup.
As to whether I believe it or not, I'm with our agencies, especially as currently constituted with their leadership. I believe in our intel agencies, our intelligence agencies.
In the planning for this trip, the White House considered not coming to Manila to avoid the bad political optics of the president being seen with a violent authoritarian like Duterte. But other Asian leaders urged the president to reconsider, and he's actually adding an extra day here in Manila. It is a show of support for those leaders and allies he needs on trade and North Korea. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell in Manila, thank you. The president's visit to the Philippines comes just weeks after government forces backed by the United States drove ISIS out of a city in the southern island of Mindanao. NBC's Bill Neely has more on the battle and the continuing threat.
President Trump ending his Asia tour in the Philippines, long a U.S. ally, but relations now strained by its controversial president.
We can survive without American money.
Rodrigo Duterte is the tough-talking leader and a man who's just fought ISIS. Donald Trump wants closer ties on his first visit to any country where ISIS has taken territory and terrorism tops their agenda. Because of this, it's Marawi, or what's left of it. ISIS captured the Philippine city, holding it for 5 months before losing it just weeks ago. More than 500,000 people fled this battle, and you can see why. The destruction here is just astonishing. They look like the war-torn streets of Iraq or Syria, but this was the new front line for ISIS in Asia.
Marawi.
It took the city with a few hundred men and held it despite daily airstrikes and a ferocious assault from troops backed by U.S. special forces. The army retook the city, but only by destroying it. ISIS lost more than 900 fighters in the battles in these streets, yet it's claiming victory because it held this city for so long. The battle here may be over. The threat from ISIS is not. They're still hunting for militants in the ruins. The US and the Philippines determined to stop ISIS spreading further across Asia.
Marawi City liberated.
Presidents Trump and Duterte, who seem to admire each other's record, now united in fighting a common enemy. Bill Neely, NBC News, Marawi, the Philippines.
1 week after a gunman entered a church and shattered the life of a small Texas town, the community came together today to remember those who died and to try to move beyond the tragedy. The church opened its doors again today. NBC's Ron Allen was there.
Inside the First Baptist Church Sanctuary, where a gunman killed 26 people 1 week ago, now sit 26 chairs to honor the lives lost, arranged where each victim sat. It took 72 hours to repair and restore the sanctuary, the pastor said, to remind everyone that love never fails. Today, there was an outpouring of love under gray skies. Hundreds drove to the small town of 700 to the first Baptist Church service since the massacre. So many people, the tent covered a baseball field.
I just wanted to show up and show respect.
As a fellow Texan and as just basically a Christian, basically it's our duty to basically support everybody who's around us and the community that's actually hurting from such a tragic event.
One of those still hurting, Roseanne Solis, who was shot in the shoulder.
I'm scared to even be anywhere where there's a crowd because I'm scared that, you know, the same thing is going to happen. And, you know, I just don't feel safe anymore.
Today, church leaders tried to lift up their congregation with the help of their community. Pastor Frank Pomeroy, away last weekend, led the service. He lost his 14-year-old daughter, Annabelle.
And I guarantee you, beyond any shadow of a doubt, they are dancing with Jesus today.
Jimmy Stevens is comforted by his faith. He lost his sister, Peggy Warden, who died shielding her grandson, who survived 6 bullet wounds.
I'm always going to remember the love and the smile. And I'm 58, and she was with me for 56 years. So I was blessed all that time to have a sister that loved me and stood by my side no matter what.
We were able to spend just a short time in the sanctuary. You can see there's now a line of people from near and far waiting to get in. It's peaceful. It's pristine. It's very solemn inside. Amazing what they've been able to accomplish in a short period of time, a place to reflect and think about what happened. There had been talk of demolishing the sanctuary, but now the hope is to maintain it as a memorial, a tribute, and a reminder. Jose?
Ron Allen in Texas. Thank you. The Air Force is deep into its investigation of how it failed to report information that would have blocked Devin Kelly from buying the rifle he used in the Texas church shooting. But it turns out that's far from the only gap in the federal database used to conduct background checks. Justice correspondent Pete Williams has more.
10 years ago, it was the third worst mass shooting in America. A Virginia Tech senior, Sung-Wee Cho, killed 32 people and wounded 17. More than a year earlier, a judge had declared him a danger because of mental illness. But that information never made it into the federal database for checking the backgrounds of gun buyers. If it had, the sale would have been blocked. The shooting prompted states to dramatically step up their reporting of mental health records. Since then, those reports have more than quadrupled. But other factors can block a gun sale, including a felony conviction, drug addiction, or a history of domestic violence. And that full range of information sent by the states and the military to the FBI at this facility in West Virginia remains frustratingly incomplete.
Let's not pretend we just woke up yesterday in amazement that the records of people who are seriously mentally ill or have been convicted of crimes aren't ending up on the background checks.
The massive databases maintained by the FBI handled an average of 52 checks every second, 27.5 million last year. 120,000 gun sales, less than 1%, were blocked. The Defense Department says it's now reviewing how the military reports information to the federal databases after the Air Force admitted it failed to flag Texas gunman Devin Kelly's conviction for domestic violence. It's a long-standing problem for the Pentagon, first identified 20 years ago by the DOD Inspector General, who found a high level of non-compliance with reporting requirements. And former FBI officials say it's still a mixed picture for the states, with some actually unable to pass along all the data, blocked, for example, by state laws that prohibit sharing some mental health records.
It's not that the system is weak. The system has a lot of records in it. The problem is we can't afford to have a single record missing.
Last Sunday's shooting exposed more flaws in a system that even the NRA says is important for keeping guns out of the wrong hands. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
It was a frightening scene in San Diego last night when a stairway and platform gave way at a play space, injuring more than two dozen people, most of them children. We get more from NBC's Steve Patterson.
A terrifying crash at a children's gym.
Potential structure collapse. I'm not sure how many victims.
Investigators hoping to learn how a wooden platform crumbled, injuring at least 20 kids and two adults.
I kind of just heard like a crack, and then all of a sudden it just crashed down, and I heard people like screaming when it was coming down.
It happened last night at San Diego's Vault PK, an acrobatic activity facility. The platform collapsed as the children were running up the stairwell to get pizza.
My hands were shaking. I was really scared because I didn't know if any of my friends were hurt or not.
The injured rushed to area hospitals, some with spinal injuries, most treated for scrapes and bruises. The gym's owner, Jessica Ho, released a statement saying in part, "My heart aches for the families who call Vault PK home. We are working with authorities and will continue to do so to resolve this." A disastrous collapse, turning a children's night of fun into an alarming scene. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
Overseas, a powerful earthquake struck late today in the border region between Iran and Iraq. Officials in Iran say at least 61 people were killed, more than 300 injured. Iran's news agency says the 7.3 magnitude quake was felt in at least 14 provinces. It was centered in northeast Iraq, not far from the city of Halabja. Poland marked its National Independence Day this weekend, but the official events were overshadowed by a huge march through Warsaw by tens of thousands of nationalists. Some held banners supporting white supremacy, also linking Islam with terrorism, while others carried banners of an anti-Semitic group that goes back to before World War II. Those who took part in a counter-demonstration were greatly outnumbered. Let's turn to the issue of climate change. A UN conference on global warming is going on in Germany, where there are competing U.S. interests at work. On the one hand, the Trump administration plans to make the case for cleaner fossil fuels and nuclear energy as an answer to climate change. But another American delegation, critical of President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, is also at the conference. It is led by California Governor Jerry Brown and former Vice President Al Gore. The group will emphasize that much of this country remains committed to reducing carbon emissions that warm the planet and the use of renewable energy. With all that in mind, we went back to a place where the impact of climate change is unmistakable. NBC's Ann Thompson reports from Glacier National Park.
The breathtaking beauty of Montana's Glacier National Park, now a disturbing reflection of our warming climate. We head to Grinnell Glacier, a journey by boat and four-mile hike, led by U.S. Geological Survey ecologist Dan Fagree.
That's where Grinnell Glacier used to be.
Named after conservationist George Grinnell.
So what he could see in 1887, we in 2017 can't see at all.
No, not at all. And even people coming here in 1967 could see the glacier from here.
The glacier has lost half its size since then, as we've put more heat-trapping greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
Is this being driven by climate change?
Yes. The glaciers grow when it gets cooler or they get more snow, and they retreat when it gets warmer and they get less snow.
The glaciers have been here 7,000 years, reaching their largest extent in the mid-1800s. Since then, the park has lost 85% of its ice area.
Once home to 150 glaciers, today there are just 26.
Well, these glaciers have their fate sealed. They're going to simply disappear. It's already too warm for them to exist.
On a 90-degree day, Fagree adds to the photographic record, illustrating the jaw-dropping impact of warmer summers and winters that are not as cold, evident even in the 25 years Fagree's made this climb. Hosting Vice President Al Gore in 1997, NBC News just 2 years ago, and now today.
So if somebody wants to come see the glaciers, what's your advice?
Well, I think they should come soon. We are losing ice every single year.
Nature's masterpieces retreating before our eyes. Ann Thompson, NBC News, Glacier National Park.
And there is late word tonight that Liz Smith has died. The famed gossip columnist spent decades chronicling the highs and lows of New York City society, writing about it for the New York Daily News and the New York Post, among other newspapers. Smith also spent more than a decade on WNBC here in New York, winning an Emmy Award for her work in 1985. She became a champion for those who couldn't read, raising $37 million for the cause of adult literacy. Liz Smith was 94 years old. Still ahead tonight, as the busy holiday travel season gets underway, how to increase your chance of avoiding annoying delays and getting there on time. Also, the special delivery today by Rocket, including pizza and ice cream. With less than 2 weeks to go before Thanksgiving, it's the season for booking those holiday airline tickets. At the peak, more than 2 million people a day will be cramming into those airline seats. So, is there a way to make sure you get where you're going on time? Here's our aviation correspondent, Tom Costello.
Safe to say holiday travel is not on most people's bucket list. The cold, the crowds, the cancellations.
I don't want to sleep on the floor or on a cot next to somebody snoring.
So is there a trick to avoiding the holiday travel blues? NBC News asked aviation data provider MassFlight to run the numbers. And get this.
The best flights for performance tend to actually be the ones that are the least expensive.
You heard right. The cheaper flights are most reliable because they usually leave early. At 6 a.m., 88% of flights leave on time. By 9 p.m., only 62% leave on time.
Get up early, leave early.
That's the secret.
That's the secret. Leave early.
Since the weather is usually better in November, Thanksgiving travel usually runs more smoothly than Christmas. Over the last 3 years, the airports with the most departure delays over Thanksgiving, Newark with fewer than 79% of flights leaving on time, followed by San Francisco, LaGuardia, LAX, O'Hare, and Denver. But over Christmas, Denver has the worst delays with just 61% leaving on time, followed by big hub airports, LAX, Newark, Dallas, Las Vegas, and Chicago Midway. Experts advise fly direct and avoid the snow.
If you're going to connect, your point is make it a longer connection and a southern city?
Yes. If you're going to connect, look at airports like Atlanta. They have outstanding performance.
Another tip, when comparing airlines, look at which airline is building in extra pad time to ensure you get there on time.
And if you can, avoid small regional planes. The bigger the aircraft, the more passengers, the less likely the flight will get canceled.
If your flight gets canceled, my heart goes out to you. It's going to be very, very hard this holiday season to get on another flight easily and quickly.
And the start of this yearly ritual is now just a week away. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
We're back in a moment with Breakfast at Tiffany's, for real. The scene on the eastern shore of Virginia early this morning as a commercial rocket blasted off toward the International Space Station. The rocket, loaded with more than 7,000 pounds of cargo, including science equipment, water, clothing, and Christmas presents, and perhaps most importantly, ice cream. Lots of it. And frozen pizza. Speaking of food, this was the first weekend you could actually eat breakfast at Tiffany's. In the famous film, Holly Golightly, played by Audrey Hepburn, had to settle for a croissant and coffee outside the Tiffany store in New York. Well, on Friday, Tiffany's opened the Blue Box Cafe. It's on the fourth floor of its flagship store on Fifth Avenue. Breakfast starts at $29. I mean, it's Tiffany's, after all. When we come back, holiday spirit, providing a welcome boost to some of those still struggling after Hurricane Irma. 2 months after Hurricane Irma tore through the Caribbean, many are still struggling to recover. The island of Barbuda was almost wiped out, the entire population evacuated. Today, many of those families remain in shelters in nearby Antigua, where a visit from some volunteers just ahead of the holidays came with a gift of hope. Morgan Radford was there.
An entire island nearly wiped off the map. Sergeant Neil George was there as Hurricane Irma barreled through Barbuda at 150 miles per hour, leaving complete destruction in its wake.
Is this the type of damage that we're seeing all around?
Yes, basically. You cannot come here because there's nothing to do.
There's nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go.
Here in Barbuda, a virtual ghost town. This town square was once filled with shops and homes, and now blue tarp and debris as far as the eye can see.
with their homes obliterated and their schools destroyed. The island's children have been forced to evacuate with their families to nearby Antigua, many of them living in shelters like this one at the local cricket stadium.
So it's been a challenge. It's home. That's where my heart is.
What do you miss about home?
I miss my toys.
Which is why a group of volunteers in North Carolina working for Christian nonprofit Samaritan's Purse is loading up a plane filled with shoeboxes stuffed with toys, dolls, and other surprises for the displaced children of Barbuda.
Lord, help this to change lives.
Pastor Mark Brumbelow and his wife Sherry understand the heartbreak all too well. Their own home in Texas was destroyed by Hurricane Harvey.
As we start helping others, our problems become smaller.
They've come to Antigua to put a smile on the faces of these children living in limbo.
Is that a bracelet? Do you like it? How does it feel when you have these boxes?
That's lots of hope.
A gift of hope amid the joy of an early Christmas celebration, even if it's not at home. Morgan Radford, NBC News, Antigua.
And that's NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. Lester Holt will be in tomorrow with a story of a police officer and his young partner, part of our series, Those Who Serve. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time, and good night.